Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, this is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. I want to touch on several topics today. First, these last 2 weeks have essentially been a major joyous holiday season for the Christian world. However, the fate of the Christians in the Muslim world is not good at all. A recent article in the London Sunday Telegraph by the head of the Church of England noted that millions of Middle Eastern Christians are on the verge of, in his words, imminent extinction. Christians face government harassment in Egypt, Lebanon, and Iraq, and particularly in the Palestinian Authority. The city of Bethlehem, the birthplace of Christianity, has witnessed a precipitous drop in the Christian population because of the treatment of Christians under the Palestinian Authority. In 1950, 86% of the population of Bethlehem was Christian. Today, it's only 12%. In Gaza, there were 6,000 Christians in 2006 when Hamas took control, but as of 2016, there were only 1,100 left. Meanwhile, in Israel, the Christian population has stayed mostly stable at about 2%. Second topic I want to touch upon briefly is the number of options open to Israel with regard to the area of Judea and Samaria. Each option has its benefits and drawbacks. Israel can annex the whole area, figure out what status to give to the Arabs. There's also the option to apply Israeli law to Area C, where 90% of the Jews live. And the third option is to maintain the status quo until conditions enable other options. And the final thing I want to talk about, something you don't hear much about, but I think it's really important, is the treatment of Arabs themselves under the Palestinian Authority. In particular, there was the case of an Arab with American citizenship who was sentenced to life imprisonment for the crime of selling property in Jerusalem to a Jewish organization. And based upon this, I can only wonder what kind of peace can be reached between Israel and the Palestinian Authority that takes such action. This is a serious incident for the Americans to handle also. I'll be back after the break. Thanks again for listening.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire. News, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to say a few words about the situation in Judea and Samaria, which is commonly called the West Bank. The West Bank is a name given to the area in the central hill country of Israel, west of the Jordan River, when the Jordanians illegally took over the area after the 1948 war. They wanted to give a name to this part west of the Jordan River to separate it from the east part. They called it the West Bank. There was never a West Bank in history. This is Judea and Samaria, but it's commonly called the West Bank, so I have to use that term. Now, what I want to talk about is the fact that the term settler has entered the global lexicon as a pejorative for all those Israelis like myself who lived in territories over which the Palestinians would like to take control and kick the Jews out. This term settler, this designation, is a central tenet of the anti-occupation propaganda, which paints Israelis in the West Bank as colonialists, and thereby dehumanizing them to the degree that justifies their murder on the rationalization that it serves them right, or they had it coming because they shouldn't have been there to begin with. Now, the Israeli government has been really inept at conveying to the international community its own posture vis-a-vis the Palestinians. With specific respect to the West Bank, the issue is not only a legal one, but probably more importantly, it is correlated to that of the basics of Zionism, which means that the Jews come back to their homeland after 2,000 years of exile. Unless the government can explain to what end Israelis are living there on land that the Palestinians claim is theirs, it remains impossible to reverse the stigma attached to the nearly 400,000 Israeli citizens living across the 1967 borders. Of greater significance is that the government's inadequacy in explaining why it's there has fostered conditions that render it unable to fulfill its most fundamental governmental functions, which is to keep the people safe. This was made starkly apparent when Israelis are being killed, or Israelis who live over the green line in what's called the West Bank. Somewhat perversely, this situation creates a feedback loop of strategic vulnerability and suffering as the settler community protests against its own government, that then satisfies the protesters by doing more building. In other words, the government doesn't build unless there's a protest. So this brings predictable consequences, and the whole world rises up against Israel. In domino fashion, each case of government acquiescence to the protesters by building is dictated primarily to by the demands and by electoral considerations. So what it does is it transforms the community into targets, not only of further Palestinian attacks, but also its worldwide censure. A case in point is the focus on Israeli land grabbing by the so-called Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, BDS, which really acts as a cover for mainstreaming the rank anti-Semitism disseminated by many of its adherents. Erecting a few homes in disputed areas does nothing to solve the conflict with the Palestinians, but on the contrary, it exacerbates the conflict while blowing wind into the sails of Israel's detractors. What should be done, the proper course of action by our government, would be first of all to invest in infrastructure to support and safeguard those Jews already residing in the West Bank. I'm not talking about building more homes. I'm talking about protecting the Jews who live there already. For instance, and I know having lived there for 25 years, and I have children living there, it's obvious to all the transportation system of what should be considered hostile territory is inadequate, so Israelis are required to expose themselves by hitching rides from little shelters located along major highways that are used both by Jews and by Arabs. The government should allocate funds toward development of a network of buses connecting Jewish communities that also commute to primary places of employment. Most of the people who live over the Green Line in the so-called West Bank and the so-called settlers, most of them work in Israel proper. So the makeshift structures should be taken down and real solid structures put up for people waiting on the main roads. Now, what about those are the micro options. But what about the macro options? What should be done with those areas? let's look at the options. First of all, Israel can annex the entire West Bank and grant citizenship to some 2 million Palestinians. This is a move that critics contend will lead eventually to the emergence of a binational state with a Jewish minority. There's also the possibility of applying Israel law only to Area C, which accounts for roughly 6% of the total territory and where some 90% of the Jews reside. After the Oslo Agreement, the land was divided into areas A, B, and C. A is totally Arab, C is pretty much totally Jewish, and B is somewhere in between. So there could be, you could apply Israeli law to Area C. This would limit the number of Palestinians formally incorporated into Israel, but at the same time it would minimize the potential for a two-state solution, as the remaining Palestinian areas would amount to mere non-contiguous dots on the map. Interesting, by the way, the Arabs who live in Jerusalem, many of them are given Israeli citizenship, but some of them refuse to take it, and many who are already Israeli citizens refuse to vote in the elections. Of course, then the third path of the peace process is a never-ending extension of the Oslo Accords that are more than 25 years old. And everybody pretty much agrees that it's not going to bear any fruit anytime soon. We keep hearing that President Trump is preparing to roll out his proposal early this year, and it may contain some new parameters that could reframe the issues and perhaps offer more realistic solutions to this failed two-state solution paradigm. Otherwise, the creation of a Palestinian state comes with its own perils for Israel and for the Palestinians themselves. Since the Oslo Agreement, they've had an opportunity to set up their own government, and they failed miserably. The infighting among the various Palestinian factions seems to take up most of their time. The likelihood that any new entity that would be overrun by Hamas, just as the case in the Gaza Strip back in 2007, when they fought each other and the Palestinian Authority, the official representative of the Palestinian people, was thrown out violently. Palestinian elections have not been held for over a decade, and it's pretty much testament to the expectation that Hamas will win again anyhow. This would give the genocidal Islamists a mandate to continue waging jihad, holy war, to eradicate the Jewish state. And actually, if you gave them that area in their control, they have a more advantageous location, only a few kilometers away from major Israeli civilian centers and critical infrastructure. So we don't really know what to do. But in the meantime, those Israelis who live over the Green Line in the West Bank, they must be protected. These are Israeli citizens who pay their taxes, who serve in the army, who have accepted upon themselves all the responsibility of being Israeli citizens, which they are, and therefore they deserve the same infrastructure to protect them and their security. Of course, there's another option which our Prime Minister Netanyahu has been suspected of favoring, as to maintain the status quo until conditions enable or force Israel to adopt one of the other alternatives. So there's not going to be any reformation within Palestinian society that enhances the probability of making a Palestinian state. Not only are they non-democratic, but their entire educational system, starting in kindergarten, is to indoctrinate the children that the state of Israel has no right to exist and individual Jews have no right to life. This is the situation that has been brought about by the Oslo Agreement. And by the way, I've said before and I say again, all these people involved in the Oslo Agreement should be ashamed to show their faces publicly. Many of them still write books and write articles in that their blunder It was a blunder that after 2,000 years of Jewish exile, we finally have our own country, and then we had these leaders who actually blew it badly by bringing in a sworn enemy into our midst. That's the situation now. Anyhow, I just wanted to review what the options are, and at least we should see to it that our citizens are defended. I'll be back after the break.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. I'm recording this program on a week of the secular New Year, which is between December 25th, when the Roman Catholic Church and most of the Western Protestant Christian churches celebrate Christmas, and next week, January 7th, when the Greek Orthodox Christians celebrate Christmas. So I want to say a few words, and I want to take stock of religious freedom here, not only in Israel, but in the region in general. Last month, the head of the Church of England wrote in the Sunday Telegraph that millions of Middle Eastern Christians are on the verge of imminent extinction. And he wrote the following: in the birthplace of our faith, the community faces extinction. It's the worst situation since the Mongol invasions of the 13th century. This comment was made by the Archbishop of Canterbury in England, Justin Welby. Christians face government harassment in Egypt, and it's leading many of them to emigrate in record numbers. Let's take a look at Lebanon. Lebanese Christians fear Hezbollah's growing power in their country, along with an influx of Syrian refugees. Turkish Christians are also facing oppression by their government, and in Iraq, the Christian population has been nearly wiped out, and those remaining are trying to rebuild their lives. Closer to home, let's see what's happening here in Israel and in the Palestinian Authority. The Christian Palestinian population is in a constant downward trend. Christians have long been fleeing Palestinian-controlled areas because of the systematic abuse. Terrorists affiliated with the then PLO leader Yasser Arafat raided and trashed the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem in 2002, holding the monks hostage. Last year, Christians were only 2% of the Palestinian population. This includes both what they call the West Bank and Gaza, which is less than half their numbers just a generation ago. In 1950, in Bethlehem, 86% of the residents were Christians. It was known as a Christian town. Now, in 2017, they were only 12%, down from 86% to 12%. In Gaza, there were 6,000 Christians when Hamas took control in 2006. But as of 2016, there were only 1,100. They started with 6,000. They're now 1,100. Hamas has murdered Palestinian Christians for their faith and commandeered the Gaza Baptist Church for combat because it's one of the tallest buildings in Gaza City. Now, despite this, the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, who's now in the 11th or 12th year of his fourth year presidency, he still claims to be the defender of Christians, and the Palestinian leadership on the whole thinks it ought to control Christian holy sites. All the while, they're also denying Jewish history at those sites. Palestinians like to claim that Jesus was a Palestinian, even though he was Jewish. The word Palestinian didn't exist in those days. And despite the importance of the temple in Jerusalem to the New Testament, many deny that there was any temple at all. These denials continue to this day. And by the way, the most famous denial was when Arafat told Bill Clinton, when Clinton visited here as president, Arafat told Clinton that the Jewish connection to Jerusalem was a falsehood. But Clinton told Arafat that he was wrong. As a Christian, he knows the Jewish temple was here. Meanwhile, in Israel, the Christian population has stayed mostly stable around 2%, growing by about 5,000 people in the past 20 years. Christians are free to worship in Israel without persecution or any pressure from the authorities. The latest controversy with the churches in Jerusalem shows the stark difference between Israel and its neighbors in the Middle East. And this is a controversy, by the way, which I'm very much aware of, because I rent an apartment in a house which is on church property here in the center of Jerusalem. The crux of the dispute is about management of land owned by the Greek Orthodox Church, on which private Israelis reside. Jerusalem residents are concerned that when the church sells the land to third parties, their homes will be endangered, whereas the church wants to use their vast tracts of land for much-needed funds. You see, what's happening is I live right near a Greek Orthodox church, and apparently the church owns a lot of property here, and about 60 years ago, they gave 99-year leases to a Jewish organization. I think it was to the Keren Kayemet, which handles land here in Israel. And they built on that on this land. They sold apartments, and they're renting out apartments. And now I live in one of those apartments. Now what's going to happen is that the 99-year rental is going to run out. And in the meantime, the private investors have purchased the land so that when it becomes free of the church, they can sell this land. This is not a matter that limits Christian worship or in any way impact or harm the vast majority of Christians in Islam. It's just something that has to be resolved. In any case, it's a big enough problem that the president of Israel, Reuven Rivlin, intervened in favor of the churches so that no changes are currently being made. There are all kinds of committees involved in this, and I get all kind of mail about it. As a renter, it really doesn't affect me. It really affects the owner of the apartment. But in general, religious freedom is such in Israel. There has been a growing trend of Israeli Christians even enlisting in the Israeli army, even though they're not required to do so out of patriotism and appreciation for Israel. Neither Muslims in Israel nor Christians in Israel are required to go into the army. Only Jews go into the army, and the others are free. They can volunteer if they wish. So here we are now between the two Christmases, that of December 25th and that of January 7th, and we should really appreciate living in a country with these freedoms. And we can only hope that conditions for Christians will improve in other areas of the Middle East. Since we're talking about religion, I want to touch upon another subject, totally different, but it's of interest. It's the kind of thing that generally comes under the radar. The Babylonian Talmud has about 2,700 pages. There's a thing called the Daf Yomi, where people learn one page a day. And when they finish every 7 years, they have a big celebration. Now, what's happened is Yet hundreds of yeshiva students and rabbis from all across the spectrum of the national religious community participated in a marathon Talmud study session last Sunday, and they completed the 2,711 pages of the Babylonian Talmud over the course of one day. Each little group chose a section of the Talmud that it would study so that the entire Talmud would be completed in one day. I never heard of anything like this being done before. Some of the most senior rabbis in the national religious community participated in the study session, and even a few members of the Knesset. Some senior Haredi rabbis were also involved, and the event, which was called Together in Holiness, was organized by the Association of Hezer Yeshivas. Hezer Yeshivas are yeshivas where students study and serve in the army, and it was designed to unite the different components of the national religious sector, from the most liberal wing through the moderate mainstream and to conservative so-called National Haredi branch of the community. These studies, they teamed up in what's called a chavruta, which is one-on-one partnership. Two people did this studying, and they were required, each chavruta, each group of two, had to study 8 pages each in order to complete the study of the entire Talmud. I think they began at 8 in the morning. They finished at 6 o'clock in the evening. So it was absolutely fascinating thing. We're talking about Torah, which is connected to the state of Israel, to the army of Israel, to the land of Israel, which is connected to life. So the Torah is an instruction book for life. It's critical for the existence of the state and the people. And so they got together one day and completed the entire Talmud, which I think is absolutely fantastic, because among other things, it included people from the entire spectrum of the national religious. This is pretty much of a historic event in which the whole community, those who love and study the Torah, took part, and which Talmud study, which is a foundational stone in the building of every yeshiva for thousands of years, was done here. It was not done under government auspices. It was organized by the Association of Hezder Yeshivas. I don't know who came up with the idea, but I didn't know about it, quite honestly, until the results were in. So the entire Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, was studied in one day all over the state of Israel. And that is probably, I believe, a first, to which you make a special blessing, Shechianu. We thank God we live to see this kind of thing. I'll be back after the break.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentico, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. Listeners to this program know that I like to do what's called Under the Radar. These are items that I hear on the radio, see on television, or read in the newspapers or magazines about things that are happening in Israel and in the Jewish community around the world. They add color to understanding the news. Now, the first item I have today is a little bit more serious than just adding color. It didn't get a big headline, but it says something about our relationship to the Palestinian Authority and the chances of having peace with them, which everybody seems to be pushing for, along with the so-called two-state solution. This article appeared in the paper on January 1st, New Year's Day, and I'll read parts of it to the listeners where they speak for themselves. A Palestinian court in Ramallah sentenced a Palestinian American to life in prison with hard labor after finding him guilty of selling a house in the old city of Jerusalem to a Jewish Israeli organization. The man was identified as Issam Akil, a resident of East Jerusalem, who was arrested by Palestinian Authority security forces in October. He's a 53-year-old Palestinian with American citizenship. The Palestinian Grand Criminal Court found Akil guilty of attempting to cut off a part of the Palestinian land and adding them to a foreign country. The verdict was issued after a one-week trial. This guy who was arrested, Akil, he worked for one of the Palestinian Authority ministries in a hospital in East Jerusalem, according to Palestinian sources. By the way, it's not quite clear how he was arrested by Palestinian forces. He's a resident of East Jerusalem, and therefore he holds an Israeli ID card. It gives him immunity against being arrested or prosecuted in a Palestinian Authority court. Some say he was arrested when he was staying in Ramallah. It's not quite clear. At any rate, Akil was accused of acting as a broker in the sale of a house jointly owned by two Arab families in the Muslim quarter in the old city of Jerusalem. Palestinians claimed that the house was sold for $500,000 to Atarit Kahanim, a Jewish organization that's been purchasing Arab-owned properties in East Jerusalem for a number of years. By the way, generally what happens is when a Palestinian sells property to a Jew, and they generally escape from the country. They know they're going to be arrested or be executed. And after they make the sale and they all kind of deals are done where they get the money outside the country and so forth. But as you can see, selling a property to any Jewish organization or to a Jew is a crime under the Palestinian Authority rules. So the arrest of this guy, Akil, essentially is part of the Palestinian campaign to deter Palestinians from selling properties to Jews. This is a practice that is punishable by death in accordance with Palestinian law. And the Palestinian religious authorities have repeatedly warned against the involvement of Palestinians in real estate transactions with Jews, saying that anyone who ignores the warning will be accused of high treason. And by the way, Akil was sentenced in spite of protests in Israel and the U.S. The American ambassador to Israel is aware of what happened. So Israeli police have launched an investigation into the circumstances surrounding the arrest. The point I wanted to make with this news item is, how can anybody talk about a two-state solution, and how can anybody talk, have any kind of peace with the Palestinian authorities when the Palestinian authorities will arrest people and put them in jail for life for selling property to a Jew? Can you make peace with any kind of organization or entity that does that kind of thing? This, the very arrest of this fellow Akil, who, by the way, as I said, holds American citizenship, it's an incident that shows the impossibility of having any peace with the Palestinian Authority. Another item along the same lines, in the sense that it's not quite under the radar, but it's not super major news, but it's important. And that is that Israel and the United States are going to leave the United Nations Educational, Cultural, and Scientific Organization. Both countries announced their departure. The organization is known by its initials, UNESCO. And they're going to withdraw. Israel's been a member of state of UNESCO since 1949, since the very beginning. In the last 17 years, the global cultural body has registered 9 sites within Israel on the World Heritage List. But it has taken pro-Palestinian stances, which have created increasing friction with both the United States and with Israel. The situation intensified about 2 years ago after the Palestinian Authority and the Arab states pushed forward resolutions at UNESCO's executive board that ignored Jewish ties to the Temple Mount and the Western Wall, describing the most holy sites in Judaism solely by their Muslim names of Al-Haram al-Sharif and the Burak Plaza. They also passed texts disavowing Israeli sovereignty over Jerusalem. In other words, the UN, UNESCO, is voted to deny Jewish history. Also, back in 2017, the World Heritage Committee, which is related to them, voted to inscribe Hebron's Old City and the Tomb of the Patriarchs as belonging to the state of Palestine. UNESCO's executive board has passed a bunch of texts, I know, or addendums, for example, that affirmed that Jerusalem was a holy city to all three religions, but also disavowed Israel's sovereignty over Jerusalem and claimed that Hebron and Rachel's tomb were an integral part of Palestine. They also... The UNESCO launched a policy guide for educators on anti-Semitism, and the UNESCO itself is an anti-Semitic group. Since 2009, UNESCO has passed 71 resolutions condemning Israel and only 2 resolutions condemning all other countries combined, which is simply outrageous. You know, the mark of anti-Semitism, this was commented on by our prime minister, he put it nicely. He said the mark of anti-Semitism was one singling out the Jewish people for slander and condemnation. However, the mark of anti-Semitism today is singling out the Jewish state for slander and condemnation. So no matter what UNESCO says, the Western Wall is not occupied Palestinian territory. And the Cave of the Patriarchs in Hebron is the burial site of Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Leah, is not a Palestinian heritage site, no matter how you slice it. So the UNESCO's anti-Semitism can really no longer be tolerated by Israel. So what they're doing is denying history. And essentially, you know, it's like somebody voting in the UN that the world is flat. You know, that vote would pass if the Jewish people, the Jewish state in the state of Israel, put in a motion in UNESCO that the world is round. So I think UNESCO would vote against it and say that the world is flat. That's the bias today. So this is something which is more than under the radar. This shows what's happening on the international scene. It doesn't get big headlines, but essentially shows what is actually happening vis-a-vis the UN and vis-a-vis the Palestinian Authority, with whom we are being pushed to make a two-state solution. So obviously, these are very, very important news items. Incidentally, one of the most bitter and highly publicized battles over the last 3 or 4 years has been the struggle between Israel and the Palestinians for cultural and historical sovereignty over sites in Hebron and Jerusalem. Most prominent has been Israel's attempt to stop the Palestinians from designating the Temple Mount solely as a religious Islamic site, and referencing it only by its Muslim name, Al-Haram al-Sharif. So in 2017, the United States which has been Israel's strongest champion at UN, finally called it quits at UNESCO. And as I said a moment ago, they're quitting, and Israel is following suit. The U.S. decision left Israel with no choice. It could hardly stay in the UNESCO while the U.S. exits UNESCO on behalf of Israel. But it underscores the dilemma Israel often finds itself in, whether it is best to boycott a situation, which has become pretty much like a kangaroo court for Israel, or to stay in, even though its failure is assured. So this is what's happening, and I think it's important for the listeners to know. Again, anybody who's pushing for a two-state solution has to take these kind of things into account, because they show where the real truth and where the real facts lie. Having said that, let me wish all my listeners, those who are celebrating New Year, a happy New Year, and God willing, I'll be back next week. Take care of yourselves.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com homepage, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.